There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Second Tuesday of the month. That means I'll look over my shoulder here and see Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio. Good to see you.
Glad to be here, Sean.
It is also National Law Enforcement Week. That's started yesterday or started Sunday and goes through,
just
Friday,
for,
Saturday?
For the week, yeah, sure. And so we have different events. And, of course, there's different events across the country. And it had a national thing in D.C. a couple of nights ago, I think, and we'll have an event Thursday morning at Public Safety Park, a memorial service at 10:30, and then that night the Sheriff's Office will have its annual awards banquet.
All right, I know that your counterpart across the bay, Sheriff Mack, had theirs down at Robertsdale today, their memorial ceremony.
Okay, yes.
And, you know, I was thinking about that with that and the one coming up for Mobile County. We don't have to look too far to our west and the tragedy that happened with Officer McKeithen over in Biloxi.
There's
another one on the list of just this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, look at Biloxi to here is not exactly far, let alone the story nationally, what's happened with officers killed in the line of duty, but just right here in our backyard, let alone what Mobile's seen over the last year and a half.
Yeah, and it's a different type. I mean, like the one in Biloxi looks like just walked up and assassinated the police officer, and so we're seeing more of those type shootings, you know.
Any insight in that you can let us know just from kind of seeing it through your eyes in law enforcement all these years?
I think the person's going to have some mental problems. Of course, it's not going to justify what he did, and,
right.
and he'll still face trial, but I just know that's maybe part of it.
Remember the odds of this, if people go back to the arrest, this guy, the suspect, was walking down the side of the road up near Wiggins.
Mm-hmm.
Biloxi police officer who lives in Wiggins gets off shift, is driving home the way I understand it, sees the suspect up by where he lives, which is 10, 20 miles away or more from Biloxi, and sees him and calls Wiggins PD to come get him. That the odds of that, I don't know, it just left me so slack-jawed. I mean,
it just speaks to the behavior that the guy is just something, you know, crazy about him and screwed up and violent and not using good judgment even to try to get away.
Yeah, it was very strange. But now we have that they said they had people trying to hide him as well and all that. I think there'll be more come out in that story. As we also, this hour, by the way, you're welcome to ask the sheriff your chance to ask a question of Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran at 343-0106. We'd love to hear from you on the phone, but if not, you can also text. And you brought some numbers in, too, that we've talked about crimes here in Mobile County. The crime of having your car stolen.
Yeah, auto theft. We've had some problems with auto theft, and as we've looked into it, a striking figure just jumped out at me recently, and both in our statistics and also in the city statistics. But on the north side of Mobile County, and that's everything north of Airport Boulevard, so a lot of Sims and out that way,
mm-hmm.
22 cars were stolen this year from January to present, but 17 of those 22 cars, the keys were in them when they were stolen.
Wow.
You know, and so
like
I know the city
ignition.
Of Mobile has their chief assistant chief reported to me that they have around 60% of their stolen vehicles or where the keys are or have been left in the automobiles, and several of them have also been left in the automobile running, you know, at convenience stores and places like this. So, you know, we're saying, look, help us reduce crime just by locking your car up
right.
And keeping your keys. And the same thing goes with you know, stolen guns out of automobiles is also a big problem. If you just lock the car up so that someone just can't go in your car as easy without breaking into it and not steal a gun, because guns are heavily trafficked in these areas. A gun is one of the best things to steal and sell.
I'm going to get into talking about that. I want to take some phone calls as well, and then get into the, you know, because I'll have a reaction. And let me just voice what maybe some people are saying out there. Well, they shouldn't be stealing my car or truck anyway. I should be able to leave my keys in it.
Well, and you're absolutely right. But the realities of life sometimes is we can't control everything. And so we're asking you not to leave the keys in there, because if it is stolen, you report it to us and we spot it, then we've got to make a decision. Do we chase the suspect or not chase the suspect? And if we chase him, then that just opens up a whole nother can of worms, put our officers and the citizens at risk and dangerous. And so, you know, there's some agencies that absolutely do not pursue stolen cars. Of course, there's good arguments on both sides. Don't chase them, because you're putting everybody at risk just for an automobile. On the other hand, we know that a lot of times when they steal cars, they steal them to do more violent offense or do more crimes, many times violent offenses. So it's not just the stolen car anymore.
I want to go to Gene in Mobile. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hey, ironically, that's what I called you about, was stolen vehicle.
Okay.
My son had to go to Birmingham to work. He was at the gas company, and they got transferred up there for a while. And anyway, somebody stole his pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Jefferson County.
Mm-hmm.
It wound up in Chilton County. It was gone for 17 months. He never heard nothing on it. And so the story is they called him, finally sent the police department out here out of Mobile to notify him they had his truck. And of course, the storage fee on that was $10,000.
Goodness gracious!
And I worked at the fire department, so I know some ways can beat this, baby. But anyway, the storage fee was more than the truck was worth. But they never called him at all. They called Jefferson County 5 times. You got to be the VIN number. You know, it would look to me like they would be able to run that thing down. You got any suggestions where we might be able to go with this thing? Like I said, I'm a retired firefighter, so I know there's some things that goes on here than the others, you know.
Well, I would go to the agency that recovered it and ask of them, why didn't they notify either the reporting agency that reported it stolen? And then if they say they did, then the reporting agency that entered it into the system, go to them, ask, why didn't you notify the owners that the car was recovered?
Right.
It's real simple, and of course, if it had a switch tag or a different tag or no tag, as you're correct, if it was registered in the state of Alabama, the VIN number would have produced the last registered owner of it, which would have been your son, and so they could at least start contacting him.
The tag that was gone, of course, they took the tag off of it.
Right.
But the VIN number, they stole it apparently in Jefferson County and brought it down to Shelby County in the woods and stripped down what they wanted off of it. They didn't tear it up. They didn't drive it up where. In his truck that he thought a lot of anyway, but I can't imagine him keeping 17 months and we'll charge $10,000 storage fee. Now he said he wouldn't mind paying some storage fee on it, but that's crazy. And why Jefferson County never contacted him, I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
So you think he needs to call Jefferson County then?
If that's who recovered it. Well, no, it was recovered in Chilton, but yeah,
they called Chilton County, and they called them, told them they had the truck. Well, they never responded for 5 times, so Chilton did their thing.
So Jefferson County, I'd call Jefferson County and ask answers for them. But the issue is going to ultimately come down to where it may be a third party if Chilton County did not tow it themselves, but have a third party that's the store and the record driver, and he says, hey, I towed it to my yard, and I'm just an innocent person here. I deserve to be paid, and you get into all of that, and it's sad. But around here, I know that back when I was police chief, and I think the policy may still be the same, we'll recover a car and return it without a storage fee, I think, to the victim. But sometimes when you have a third party, it changes all that.
Hey, Gene, we appreciate the call. Leaves the line open. We'll run to the break here and then coming right back. Got folks holding coming to you at 343-0106. Yeah, I've got a question about that on what they do generally with stolen cars after they get them. We'll come right back. More of Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk 106.5.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. It's National Law Enforcement Week, and lucky to have Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio. And gotten into a conversation here about stolen vehicles, and got people holding, want to talk about that with the sheriff. Jay is in Mobile, and you're next up. Hey, Jay.
Hey, I want to thank you for your show. I think you do a very good job, and I want to say I think the sheriff does a good job, too. But I want to say this. I don't think there is a question that as a general rule we should chase people who steal cars. I'm not saying always, but as a general practice, we should. And the reason is when we don't, we let criminals know that we will let them get away with the law, or breaking the law, rather. And we can't have that. There are a lot of societies that now don't obey the law. They obey the laws they want to obey, don't obey the laws they don't want to obey, and really have just become weak and immoral. That's what they are, weak and immoral, and they will fall apart. Right now, we are seeing California fall apart and destroy itself from the inside. And we have all these people leaving California. They've ran it into the ground. So now they're leaving and moving to Florida and Texas and bringing their silly ideas with them. And these ideas will eventually come here to our area, and it will cause us to be destroyed if we follow their instructions. They don't know what they're doing. They'll ruin one area, then they'll move on to a different topic while that one sinks in the ground, like Detroit, Michigan, or San Francisco. And I don't think we should at all follow any lead from Jefferson County or Birmingham. They're in the process of falling apart themselves. They dishonor our veterans, tear down monuments to our veterans, and are a bunch of immoral degenerates.
I'm going to put you down as undecided, Jay. I'll put you down as appreciate that.
I don't disagree with some of what he's saying, but I don't know that he realizes there's been a lot of people that are innocently killed in police chases, and
yep,
not by the police, and sometimes by the police, but frequently by the bad guy that just crashes through an intersection and hits an innocent man and woman or child or something, and that's just one of the most horrible situations.
It's a tough question, though. I mean, to respond a little bit to what Jay says. Yeah, I mean, I've heard the idea that, and I can see some of what Jay says. If people don't think that y'all are going to pursue, then they feel
I've oftentimes thought that. I mean, I've subscribed to that feeling as a police officer for many years, but I'm, you know, sometimes you evolve with it and hope that technology comes along the way. And of course, generally, though, I think when you see somebody and you try to stop them and it's a stolen car and they flee, more times than not, because they know you've spotted them once in that car, they go ahead and abandon that car. But now, if you continue to chase it, generally there's only going to be one outcome. That car is going to crash, and it's not going to be worth much to the owner of the car. So, you know, you try to weigh all of those things into it. And then the final thing is, okay, what's the bad guy going to get if he's just driving a stolen car? History tells me oftentimes it's probation. And so I risk my life and anybody else's life on the street. So, and then if you top it off, if the person that owns the car left the keys in the car, you're like, come on now.
I was moving in the area of not chasing
somebody's car that was left the keys in the car. Have that policy first and see how it went, but I've not moved in that direction yet.
All right, let's go to Debbie in Mobile. You're on with Sheriff Cochran. Hello, Debbie.
Hello.
Jazzy?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just reading the screen. It's Jazzy, all right?
Sure, that's fine. As long as we get the communication okay. This is regarding keys in cars. Now, I'm talking on a real grassroots level. Lots of people have to have... we have the heat down here. Your car can get incredibly hot in the 30 seconds you think it's going to take you inside an outside place in 5 minutes. Now, a lot of people, if you got a sleeping baby or you got pets in your car and you don't want to... disturb any of that, I'd like to ask the sheriff if he thinks that it's a rational idea, because if you want, I don't do it, but I see, because I just don't take mine with me. But not everybody has that luxury, especially if you've got babies.
Can I side note before the sheriff answers? Are you leaving children in a car unattended?
No, I'm saying that I don't have to do that.
Right.
But there are people that do.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Or feel like they do. And they want to keep the air conditioning on in order to do that because of the heat that builds up in such a short time.
Right.
Now, my question to the sheriff is, and you've got to leave the keys in the car to do that. My question to the sheriff and to you is, if you have a duplicate key made so that you can leave the key in the car to leave that, you know, few minutes of, and it's got to be a few minutes. I want to emphasize that. to keep the AC on and leave the protected, that you need protected in there, and use a duplicate key to lock your car. Is that a safe reasoning?
I follow your logic, and I don't know that I would do it. I could understand some people doing it if they truly, if the car is locked and it's running like that. But it's just, I've seen such horror stories when a child's been left in the car and somebody has came along and stolen the car and not even realized there was a child in it. And usually they'll dump the child out when they discover it, but there's been cases where then they, you know, kill the child. But that is at least smarter enough and smarter than you know, leaving it unlocked running. So, yeah, that's an opportunity, and that's a decision that the parent would have to make. But I would just better plan out and not have to stop by the store coming and going with a small child.
That's why we go nowhere as a family.
Yeah, as
people
a family.
Think, hey, can y'all go do it? No, we can't. We have children. We can't go there.
Yeah.
Can y'all do that? No, we can't. We have children.
Can't stop.
I can't do anything because we have children. I want to ask this question about stolen vehicles, just a secondary question.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of interesting. What do they do with them? I mean, are the movies show them being put on ships and sent around the world, or some other movies have them in a chop shop? What happens here with a stolen vehicle?
You know, it changes over time, and it rotates or circles back. But now with the advent of the Internet and people able to sell things over the Internet, you've got a lot of chop shop type things where you can take parts apart and then you sell the parts on the Internet and things like that. It's a whole new avenue of getting rid of hot car stuff.
Yeah, I wonder is it worth the time spent by law enforcement to look into those? Because I'll see things, and listen, there may be legitimate reasons, but I'll see somebody selling on, you know, one of the local selling sites or Craigslist, mm-hmm. or something. They'll have, you know, 36 boat anchors, okay? Mm-hmm. And that makes me go, how'd you end up with there? Maybe there's a reason they have 36 boat anchors they're selling, but I don't know. Or they'll have 10 Yeti coolers, or they'll have...
Yeah, now the Yeti coolers, I would run my flag up. The anchors, it may be a skin diver that's gone out on one of the wrecks or something.
And I picked up some
anchors or something.
Yeah, I have picked up some. It's just, but I'll see things like that, and I'm like,
yeah.
I wonder what the rest of the story is. And the same thing here, if you see auto parts, I guess that's, certain things might not raise attention. You go on there, and people are selling rims and tires and swapping stuff back and mm-hmm. forth and truck boxes and all that, and I get that. But if you saw somebody regularly had this constant supply of parts.
Yeah, that would, you know, would be an indicator suspicious. But, you know, we have a lot of it back and forth across state line. A lot of people steal stuff here, go put it on Craigslist in Mississippi or somewhere over there 40 or 50 miles away, and they think it's going to go unnoticed. But, you know, some of our victims are pretty good sleuths, and
yeah.
Oftentimes we'll get calls from the victims that, hey, I found my stuff, this guy's got it listed, that's my stuff, and we've solved a lot of cases.
What do y'all do with that? Okay, so if I call up and said, you know how I told you such and such got stolen, I see, Ridge Runner 54 over on Craigslist is selling this thing. Y'all go investigate that?
We do. We sure do. Oftentimes, though, the victims already called them and meet with them, and then all of a sudden they get there and they see it's their stuff, and then there's a run, and then they call us, and it's, sometimes they get away, but we do very well catching.
But y'all as Mobile County Sheriff's Office use this technology quite frequently in what y'all do.
We do, and we enlist the aid of the citizens. You know, I mean, once we get a, you know, if they get a picture, you know, get a picture of the suspect, buddy, we put it out there, and it's shared thousands of times, and people quickly tell us who they are, and then you know, often help us locate where they're hiding out at.
You know, think about the auto theft. Something I don't hear as much anymore. Now, I think, yes, the primary, don't leave your keys in the car. Mm-hmm. Lock your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Primary, that helps. Remember, there used to be every different thing to put on your steering wheel.
Yeah,
and
the clubs and
yeah,
things
the
like
club,
that.
Right, yeah, it was right, the club. And then mm-hmm. you're like your own wheel chalk and all this stuff. I don't see the advertising for that as much anymore. Is that because of technology or
something? Yeah, I think the ignition systems were redesigned, and so the people can't, you know, the break into the steering columns easy and hot wire it like they used to could. They just changed it. And so, you know, it takes a few years for technology to catch up with the thieves or to outsmart the thieves, but then the thieves run behind them. And so, you know, a lot of the new cars are coming with these push-button starters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to eliminate the people forgetting to leave their keys or leaving the keys in the car. But I guess at some point the thieves will come up with a technology that'll send the right kind of digital code to...
Well, that's what I wonder about is, like you said, as soon as there's a move made, you know, the criminals are probably a step or two ahead.
Mm-hmm.
It would eventually, if you could have some kind of scanner that would try all combinations, would it be even easier? You wouldn't have to open up any steering column. You just sit in there and hit this little button and boom.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that one time there were problems with automatic garage door openers. People would had figured out. But I think, again, that's, you know, I don't know enough about the decoding or coding of the things now that they, you know, it's pretty high level to be able to send the right type of stuff through the waves to unlock something now.
You know, but just back to your initial here, and for people to hear that, how many out of the north side vehicles?
Out of 22 vehicles stolen this year on the north side, north half of the county, 17 of them the keys were left in.
So wow.
I believe those 17 cars would not have been stolen had they not left the keys in them.
Good point. All right, coming back, answering more questions in our discussion with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. You ask yours at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, in studio. So you got a question about anything involving law enforcement, Mobile County is the man who can answer your questions, or at least point you in the right direction for sure. We're talking about license plates a second ago. We're talking about stolen vehicles, a lot of things, but y'all have made the James Bond license plate thing. Y'all have busted somebody with one of those?
I've seen a situation where they had it would roll down on the tag and then automatically roll up.
Y'all remember that James Bond, it would flip to different ones, but you've seen one where it'll cover.
Not here, but I've seen it in the national news, and I remember the story.
Like where press a button and it covers a plate?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And,
where do you buy that on
we'll
eBay?
We'll see some of that when this, if we ever get to the point of these high tolls on the bridges.
That's right. People
hitting the thing or covering it up and then stopping at the other end of the bayway and jumping out and pulling the cover tag off.
I'll just make sure I go mud riding all the time. Slathered all over my license plate and be like, I don't know what it was. A truck had a muddy license plate. We're not sure even what state it was with. All right, talking about some stats here on car thefts and where they go. Let's also talk about this subject you and I have talked about for a couple years, and when the pill mills were shut down.
Mm-hmm.
When the access to the OxyContin and all the other associated opioids was tightened, we've been sitting here. I've been asking this question mm-hmm. for, maybe 2 years now or more. I look at Birmingham. I look at New Orleans. They have got heroin problems as mm-hmm. heroin's come in to fill the void for those addicts. Where do we stand in Mobile County?
We're seeing some heroin, but I don't think we're seeing near the levels and the amounts that those cities are seeing.
We probably have a lot traveling through here as it's going elsewhere.
Yeah, and we've intercepted some of that. You know, just recently we had, I think 2 weeks ago, 5 pounds of heroin on the interstate, and that was being trafficked through the state of Alabama.
But that probably was destined. It wasn't destined for Mobile, most likely.
Probably not. It's probably destined to Atlanta, but from Atlanta, it could have been redestined back to Mobile.
You said there's stuff that, you know, in y'all's work, and I did not get into methods and mm-hmm. all that, but stuff that comes through here, drugs mm-hmm. that come through here, go up to Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and then come back here to Mobile.
That's right. The original, you know, distribution networks, if you go back 35, 40, or 40-something years ago, Miami was the hub. You'd smuggle drugs to Miami, and then out of Miami, you'd go to the rest of the United States. Eventually, they said, we're not driving so far down south. Let's go to Atlanta, because, I mean, Atlanta's a perfect place to redistribute, and then straight up the East Coast, up to New York, places like that. So Atlanta, 10, 15 years ago, became a big hub for distribution of drugs. And the drug business is like other businesses. You get your supplies to
logistics.
Your warehouse, like logistics, and just like Amazon.com. Yeah. And I know you've noticed since the Amazon.com warehouse here in Mobile County mm-hmm. has opened up, you can order something from Amazon.com, and sometimes it's at your house the next day.
Weird thing is, their stuff shows up before I even think I want it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I was going to order one of those. But as a measure, you see some heroin here? Because this is a serious thing. I've watched what it's done in other cities.
Mm-hmm.
We have a clientele for it here.
We do.
I mean, look at the opioid numbers for the state of Alabama. I mean,
yeah, we still have deeply entrenched opioids, even though the pill mills, many of them have been shut down. There is still an undercurrent of a lot of opioids that these people are still buying, and there's a culture in Mobile County that's existed for 40 years where people would doctor shop for opioids and then live off the sales of those opioids. People with elderly people that have chronic illnesses, and they'll either a relative will take them or they themselves will go and go to different doctors and get them, and they've sold them all their life, and that still exists today.
And this is the kind of the reality, the real world, that you'll know that that has gone away when the heroin comes up.
That's exactly right. Because, I mean,
that's just an open-eyed way to...
An addict, very few of them quit, certainly don't quit on their own, and so they're going to move from one substance to another. And when that happens, we'll know that the tightening of the opioids. I saw an article this morning, I believe, that said Alabama is still the highest per capita.
It is, yeah.
So that explains there is still a huge source, because a lot of the doctors have really cut back in prescribing them, but obviously some of them are getting diverted and are still getting into the count for how many opioids are shipped into Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, none
at the
of
wholesale
it,
level probably none, is where the count comes.
Wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's good, but it is an interesting insight that you've given me over the years to watch. You can see what's happening, even if you couldn't see anything in the opioid trade.
Mm-hmm.
You could judge what would be happening with the pills by the prevalence or lack thereof of heroin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That those two things, if heroin's coming up, that means that the pills are in short supply.
That's exactly
the heroin's
right.
Down, they're still getting pills.
Exactly.
Okay. I mean, y'all soak that in. I mean, the sheriff has said that many times, and that's just a real world way to kind of, you know, it's bad on either side, but it mm-hmm. does give you an idea that because we say it's good news that we don't have this heroin here, but at the same way, it means that the pills are still
there. Yeah, the pills are still there. You know, and the heroin's being cut now somewhat with fentanyl, but again, there's still a huge opioid problem.
Horrible question here, but what would you rather deal with? Because you mentioned the fentanyl being cut in the heroin. We've seen the stories where there's so many overdoses a day. Obviously, even Mobile Fire Rescue and others have to, you know, mm-hmm. talked about having to bring the people back EpiPens. With the mm-hmm. EpiPens and all that. So which one, I mean, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, but which one is less stress on society and law enforcement?
To me, it would be easier to control the opioids if we could just get all the agencies and the big pharma to cooperate, but there's so much money in it for certain individuals, they just cross up the laws. I mean, big mm-hmm. pharma, look what they've done for so many years. They were behind the opioid crisis.
Mm-hmm.
They're still, to an extent, behind it. If you had, you know, if all the drug prescriptions were put in a database and matched together to where you could see, you know, the system would automatically tell you who's getting more than what they should be getting, and mm-hmm. immediately you could intercede either a medical intervention or a law enforcement intervention. They're so easy to be tracked. We did that with methamphetamine, with mm-hmm. the sales perfect, of pseudoephedrine. Yeah. We completely did away with labs in Mobile in the state just mm-hmm. by restricting the sales of the ingredients, pseudoephedrine. And all those systems are tied together. If you buy it here today and somewhere tomorrow, and then you go to Huntsville the third day, it'll say, no, Sean, you can't, because you already had your two packages.
Right.
The same would apply with if you could tie those systems together, and especially tie them across state lines, because, as I mentioned a while ago, the doctor shoppers, they may leave here, and years ago there was different ones that would leave Mobile, travel through Mississippi, Louisiana, and Forest, Texas, going to doctor's appointments, getting prescriptions of opioids. And then they'd come back with several hundred and then sell them. And then a month later, you know, their prescriptions were due to be rewritten again, do the same thing.
I mean,
but it's tracked. The wholesale pharmacies, you know, they track it at a wholesale level from the original manufacturer to the distribution centers to the warehouses to the pharmacist.
If y'all get a chance, you ought to Google some of these stories we don't have time to get into, but some of the individuals, cities and towns, and some in Florida, some here in Alabama, that this is off the top of my head, but they would have to, like, each citizen of the town would have to be getting, like, 1,000, I don't know if it's that many, so let me make sure I'm going to go on the low side and be mm-hmm. accurate. Each citizen of the town would have to be prescribed 500 opioid pills a year.
Yeah.
For the numbers to make sense at the pharmacy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's just how out of proportion it was. It's kind of like it's like when the old days when you have three times more voters than you had living in the city.
Right,
you know, something's going on.
Right. It's a clue.
It's a clue. But it's not rocket scientists to resolve it, but you've got to get everybody on the same page and agree, but you got to take the profit motives out.
Well, that's a tough thing, though, for law enforcement, because if it's heroin on the street, and there's dealers, and I think police departments and sheriff's departments know how to to go after. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you'll stop them, but you know how to do surveillance. You know how to get informants. You know how to go mm-hmm. this and go up the line. You get the small fish and right. work your way up. We've all seen the TV shows, right? You get the shut it down. But what if they're kind of doing it in plain sight and it's Big Pharma or another company? I mean, y'all can't go do surveillance at Big Pharma. You can't go do a raid on Big Pharma.
Right, right. It's, I mean, you've got to have the laws in
yeah,
effect,
I mean,
and you can work it up. And of course, we're seeing that at the federal level, but it's took the multi-million-dollar lawsuits to get to the bottom of it. Again, money-driven, I guess, is what's solving or getting to the bottom of it, because law enforcement really never got to the bottom of it.
There you go. Let's go to the phones, and David is in Mobile. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Sheriff Cochran.
Hi, David.
Real quick question. I was talking to a friend of mine who's an NRA lobbyist over in Louisiana about Representative Matt Simpson's law to change the law to where it would be a Class C felony to be in possession of a stolen gun.
Yes.
And his only concern about that law is, you know, is basically prior knowledge. Is there a prior knowledge component to that law where the person that is in possession of that gun either knew it was stolen or had should have reasonable suspicion that it was stolen when they came in possession of it?
Well, you take the set of circumstances and the facts, you have to kind of prove that they had knowledge that it was stolen. If they legitimately bought it somewhere, had every reason to believe that it was, you know, not a stolen gun and they were not a convicted felon or petty thief and stuff like that, yeah, they'd have a good defense. You know, and many times on receiving stolen property charges, if a case is more than 3 years old, a lot of times the state will not prosecute somebody for that. But that's very similar to the argument that some people make, and it's a false argument that we get in this on guns about why you have to have a permit or shouldn't have to have a permit, because if you leave your gun in the car and your wife drives a car, she don't have a permit. No, we don't arrest somebody for that. We've got to prove they had knowledge and dominion and control over the gun rather than just it being in the car with him.
All right, thank you, sir. That answers my question.
Great, thank
all
you.
Right, as we run to the break, text came in here. How about this? The doctors traveled too. I accidentally leased a building to some doctors that were running an operation. They all had Florida tags. Wow.
Running maybe a pill mill or something, and the doctors move around and have different... I mean, obviously, doctors sell prescriptions. Some do.
Wow.
Very few, but the ones that do are...
This is bad.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that one. Coming right back, your chance to ask the sheriff, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150 FM Talk, 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this National Law Enforcement Week. And good to have Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in the studio like we do each month. Your chance to ask the sheriff. This texter says, I have a question about shooting ranges in and around the city of Mobile. Is there a public range where citizens can learn how to use their firearm properly? I will say there. Google that. There's some indoor ranges. Outdoor ranges are tough.
Yeah, they are. There's only one in Mobile County Outdoor Range that's public, and it's located down in Code Inn. And
what's that, Mr. Mazingo? Yeah,
good. It is. Gary Mazingo. And they give lessons, and mm-hmm. it's good range. And then there's a shooting range inside of Mississippi across the Florida. I mean, across the state line on Highway
98. There's one in Moss Point, then? You know,
I'm not sure at one
and
time.
If y'all Google, there's some indoor ranges, and you might like the indoor range thing. I don't know why. It's always like worked somewhere years mm-hmm. ago where we had an indoor range. Mm-hmm. I never felt right being able.
Couldn't hardly squeeze the trigger. It's just something don't feel right. Huh?
If somebody
Mama
would
says don't shoot in the house.
That's right. If somebody would have put a video camera on me. You should have seen my face. And they're like, it's okay. Go. I'm like, we're inside. Yeah, I can't shoot. We're inside. Let's go to Brian in Daphne. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Thanks for having me on. Good to talk with you, Sheriff.
Yes, sir.
I was the texter that set up the building to some, I guess it was a pill mill.
Yes.
It was really unusual. We have a family leasing company in Opelika, and they leased a piece of commercial property really close to downtown. And it didn't raise any red flags, anything like that. And we started seeing a lot of traffic coming in and out of there. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the pharmacies, you know, it's a pretty small town. Everybody's pretty the owner of the pharmacy across the street indicated to us that there might be a problem. And we called the sheriff's department. They went out there, and they packed up overnight. I mean, the next morning, they were gone. They left office furniture. They left all these big scales, big expensive, you know, digital scales that you see when you go to the doctor's office.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it was just a very unusual situation. I've never encountered anything like that.
That's wild.
There were some guys. I saw a lot of Florida tags in the parking lot, and every now and then I'd catch a glimpse, and they looked like mafia guys. I mean, big, expensive suits. It was just a very, very odd situation. We've never run into anything like that.
That is, I mean, have you heard anything like that before?
No, but I mean, you have big time.
So in this
drug
case, it's not the
cartels, but
what Brian's telling us, in this case, it's not the people going to the doctors to get the pills. Mm-hmm. The doctors have come to the place.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could have, yeah, or you know, it could have been where you're getting illegal shipments in from overseas, and they're bringing them to a warehouse somewhere to hide them out, and then bringing people there to sell it to them. I mean, it was
our building, but the sheriff was kind of tight-lipped about it. We don't really know exactly what was going on.
What ultimately happened?
It had to do with prescriptions, and it was really fishy.
Mm-hmm.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Brian, appreciate the call.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. So, this, I want to go back to this. It's this weird situation I got to think about. You have an issue with addiction. Mm-hmm. You've said that before. You said that with meth. That's what I love, that you come in here and you don't, you're not Pollyanna here.
Mm-hmm.
That the idea that when y'all got rid of the smurfing here, mm-hmm. is y'all didn't get rid of meth addiction.
No, we didn't. But we stopped them from making labs
here.
And blowing themselves up and
blowing
costing the taxpayers millions of dollars in the burn units and you know, hazardous materials for our own officers and the firefighters and all. So they don't blow up themselves up. We've not had any of that in a long, long time. But they started bringing in Mexican ice and
which is
smoking,
meth, right?
Which is bad. Of course, it's not quite as bad for them as what they were making is. It's made in a lab instead of in a backyard or a shed. So you have healthier meth addicts, I guess. You don't have the rotted teeth quite as bad. You don't have the bad sores and things. But we're also able to interdict that and catch it in bigger quantities, 5-10 pounds or something like that at a time, where when they're manufacturing, you might get a couple of grams and that's it. So we were always just chasing meth heads. And, you know, it wasn't our goal to put every meth head in jail. We just wanted to stop making meth and try to discourage them from using drugs, of course.
It's like that whack-a-mole game.
Yeah.
And I think about what you'll have to deal with in law enforcement. You get it over here. Okay, we got it. We got it locked down over here. Well, it just went over there.
That's right. Well, many years ago, we had a heroin thing back in the 60s, 70s, and then they moved out from heroin, moved into shooting up opioids, and then they moved away from that and gradually moved into some preludin and some other pills, and then they moved into crack cocaine. And stayed
and
with crack cocaine for a long time, and you don't see as much of that anymore, nowhere near. And then methamphetamine just blew up on the scene, and now it's Mexican ice and back to heroin and stuff.
So it's interesting. I mean, it's this, the addiction's still there, but how if you had to choose one or the other, y'all mm-hmm. did, and it's better to have it not being made here for
yes,
these
right.
reasons,
mm-hmm.
save public safety,
mm-hmm.
Because addiction's a whole, that's not y'all's job. Y'all are in law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
but other parts of government for and society and churches to deal with
mm-hmm.
Trying to get people straight. But then on this other side, on the heroin thing, interesting, the fact that we don't have the heroin problem other places do tells y'all in law enforcement we still have a supply of pills here that maybe they don't in another place.
That's right. Absolutely. We've got probably percentage-wise just as many addicts as any other community, if not more.
But it's just they can still get that.
That's
support.
Right. That's exactly right.
Just, I don't know. I always like to get the sheriff to reiterate that, because let that soak in and kind of see what it means. It's just kind of, it's the whack-a-mole game. It's better, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be here. You got this addicted population, but what's the least destructive to public safety
mm-hmm.
for those people to get their stuff?
Yeah, we want to steer them away from violence, you know, the violent acts.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, crack was a violent drug. People would commit a lot of violent effects. Probably heroin, you know, less violent, certainly. And
but it's a tax on, I mean,
but it's
I look
a
at
huge
these cities.
Tax on, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you get fire and rescue teams that are working these things
yeah.
all the time.
Huge cost to the society.
Orleans,
and
Birmingham.
To the families. You know, when somebody gets addicted, they're going to start stealing from their friends and their family and, you know, go through many, many rounds of that and misery. And eventually the family's had enough, put them out, and, you know, and sooner or later, sometimes it certainly leads to death. And if they shoot heroin and then it's mixed with fentanyl, that's where all the overdose deaths come from. They're thinking they're shooting heroin and they get something more powerful, and that leads to death.
Y'all lock up your cars too.
Yeah, please do that. That could help us a lot.
All right, let's remind folks how to reach out to the Sheriff's Department online and through the app. And
yeah, you follow us, Team Sheriff, or follow us on Facebook, Team Sheriff. We have Twitter and Instagram, and we put out news that way. And you can communicate with us, give us information, tip us off. Help us solve crimes. We put out suspects information on Facebook when we have it. We do Thug Thursday, Felon Friday, and the community really helps us.
All right. As always, pass along our support to the folks at the Sheriff's Department anytime, especially in this National Law Enforcement Week.
Thank you, Sean, and enjoy all your listeners.
All right. We'll do it all
good
again.
Good questions.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do it all again tomorrow morning, starting at 6 for Mobile Mornings. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way. Remember, check out this show and the 40-some-odd hours a week, and some more odd than others, in our podcast page. So you want to go back and listen to a show, share a show, check out something you missed, fmtalk1065.com. Click the link for podcast, and it's waiting for you right there. Or you can subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or TuneIn Radio. Lots of platforms. Y'all have a great one. See you mañana.